You're listening to the DeCesare Group Podcast. Welcome back. I'm your host, Jim DeCesare, and I'm glad you're here. You know, every other week we drop a brand new episode highlighting business and economic development news in South Central Kentucky. We also have a popular companion newsletter that comes out every week that truly keeps you in the know on the business and economic news affecting our community. You can go to our website, thedecesaregroup.com, and sign up to have the newsletter come straight to your email every Monday morning. Hey, if you like our podcast, please tell your friends. You can subscribe to the DeCesare Group Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, Apple, Spotify, and even YouTube. Our guest today began his law enforcement career in 1994 at the Bowling Green Police Department. His leadership skills were developed through his 21 years of military service and continuing education with law enforcement. He is currently serving as Sheriff of Warren County, a position he's held since late 2018. He's also the recipient of a Bronze Star and a Purple Heart. Here's my conversation with Warren County Sheriff Brett Hightower. Sheriff Hightower, welcome to the DeCesare Group Podcast.
Well, thank you, Jim. It's good to be here today.
Well, it's good to see you, and thank you for coming on. You know, we had Chief Delaney on. We've had Judge Gorman on. We've had just about everybody on, and now it's time to get the High Sheriff of Warren County on the podcast.
I appreciate y'all saving the best for last.
Well, I think there's still some more people after you. I'm getting around to them. You know, I was talking to Senator Mike Wilson, who's going to be our guest in a couple of episodes. He's like, I said, you been on the podcast? He goes, no, and I'm a little hurt you haven't invited me yet. So we'll be getting him on soon, too. But, you know, I want to start off just, you know, thanking you for your service, mm-hmm. not only in the military, but in law enforcement. You've been doing this a long time.
That makes me sound old.
Well, welcome to the club. But you have. I mean, you've got a pretty long, distinguished career in law enforcement.
Yeah, I started in 1994 with the Bowling Green Police Department and, really enjoyed my time there. And I also was in, like I say, the military. I joined in 1990, mm-hmm. and kind of paired both those careers going forward, staying in the Marine Reserves initially and then getting in the Army National Guard and trying to balance both of those together, sometimes a little challenging. But, you know, it was a sense of duty to our country and our community,
sure,
which I enjoyed both.
Well, when you were in the military, were you in the law enforcement arm of military as well?
No, I was not. No, I was in infantry, and okay. I kind of almost chose to stay in that field just because it was so different. I didn't want to do the same thing all the time.
Wanted to mix it up a little bit.
So
started off Bowling Green Police Department. Now, yes. Are you originally from Warren County?
No, I'm not. I'm originally from Louisville, okay. Jefferson County. And as soon as I pretty much graduated high school, I got out of there as soon as I possibly could.
Now, we're not going to say anything bad about Louisville.
No, absolutely
right
not.
Now.
there's some great things about Louisville, but I truly came down here, transitioned to Western Kentucky University, mm-hmm. and absolutely fell in love with this community. Just the people, people working on Western's campus were just so inviting, so kind. And my grandfather, Dr. Ted Hightower, was a Methodist minister on State Street.
Yes, we've talked about that before off the record, but yeah.
Yeah, so he was here. He came in 66 uh-huh. to 77 that he was there. So I've honestly been to Bowling Green. I can remember as a young child, I was 2 or 3 years old, sitting on my mom's lap on a train coming to Bowling Green. I've been here on a C-130 on a plane,
uh-huh.
Been here by bus. They used to put me on a Greyhound bus from Louisville and send me down here in the summer. Some you wouldn't do that anymore.
No, you wouldn't.
And I've been here in a car, but I haven't been here on a boat yet. So.
Well, we can float you down to Barron River if we need to.
Maybe.
So yeah. When you took the train down here, I guess you came to the depot.
Train depot, that's
it
right.
It was still open then.
Yes.
So that's amazing.
Yeah.
So you've been around here for a long time. And, of course, State Street United Methodist Church. On State Street, your grandfather was the pastor there, and for 11 years.
11 years.
How about that?
Yes,
it's a small world because you know we went to church there for over 20-something years, and lots of great people, and they've had lots of great pastors come through there as well.
Yeah, but that's how I fell in love with Bowling Green, just through those connections there, and so I enjoyed my time here at the university as well.
That's fantastic. So. Which high school did you go to in Louisville?
Louisville Male High School.
All right. Were you in athletics? Or?
I was. I played football there. And,
okay.
You know, we always would do well through our regular season. And somehow or another, Trinity always seemed to kind of knock us out there. You know, you play out there at old Cardinal Stadium on the turf football field. It was very exciting at the time. But Trinity always seemed to, you know, with the Brom and everybody else, knock us out.
They always do well, even today.
Yes, they do.
But anyhow, well, we're glad you're down here now. And, of course, you're married. You live in, you know, I know you go to Woodburn Baptist Church, right?
That's right.
And so talk a little bit about your family. We were talking before we started recording. You've got like 17 kids now?
No. just four. So my wife and I, like I say, we've been married now. We just celebrated 28 years of marriage.
Awesome. Congratulations.
I've been at Woodburn just kind of for the last 27 years. You know, we've been there a long time. But we have four children. So my oldest is 25, and we're expecting our first grandchild here in the next few weeks. So very excited about that.
That is exciting.
And then my second oldest daughter, she's going to be 23, and then we have two younger children, almost 14 and 12.
Fantastic. So you've got them spread out there.
We've got them spread out.
That keeps you young, right?
So they say. Yeah.
Well, and of course your oldest, and I believe Justin, they went to Rich Pond together and South Warren and
yes.
and all that. So, you know, our paths have crossed many times over the last 20 years or so because started at kindergarten.
Yeah, know? That's right. Yeah.
At the pond.
That's
so,
right.
A lot of good things happening there. So, in 2018, you decided to throw your name in the hat to run for sheriff of Warren County. And I know, you know, Peanuts, who was our sheriff for as long as I can remember, did a wonderful job and you know, changing of the guard. So how's that been? How's that transition been since you've taken over as sheriff?
Yeah, it's been exciting. I had a vision, you know, and I have a good close friend, Jack Wright. You may know Jack.
Oh, yeah.
He was.
Who doesn't know Jack? He walks through my neighborhood on a regular basis, by the way.
That's right. You can always call us if you want to have him removed. Okay. No, I love Jack to death, but he come to me a few years prior to the election, and he had mentioned me running, and I think I was working at the U.S. Attorney's office at that particular time, and I was like, no, I have no interest, and so, you know, that several months went past, and he asked me again, and I said, no, I'm serious, I really don't have any interest, and nobody's calling me at night, you know, weekends, I'm available to do what I want to do, and he gave me the, you know, pray on it, and I did, and he met with me a few months later and said, well, did you hear anything? I said, absolutely nothing. I really didn't feel led at that particular time. But, you know, several months or a year later, I was at a very good friend's mother-in-law's funeral. And it was a lot of folks from Bowling Green Police were coming in and asking me if I would consider running. And I thought, you know, I don't know. I thought my wife wouldn't want me to. I went home that day. I was painting the living room and for her and with her. And I kind of threw it out there and I thought she was going to shut it down. I mean, through all the time, you know, that I'd spent in the military and law enforcement, long hours. And I just thought she'd say, you know, absolutely not. And she said, well, I know you, I know your work ethic, I know your character. And I think Warren County needs somebody like you to run. So I thought, well, I've still got a way out of this. I got two daughters, you know, at South Warren at the time. We waited for them to come home, sat with them at the kitchen table, and basically put all the negative on it. You know, there could be negative social media. It could drag you into it. You know, I'm thinking two teenage daughters would probably say, no, Dad. But they said, we think you should do it, Dad.
That's awesome.
So at that point, I did feel led. I feel like, you know, God was kind of leading me in that direction. So I didn't realize that the deadline to file was the next day.
Oh, so, wow.
I paid no attention.
So we're in January now.
We're in January. So I went down, filed, and I thought I'm gonna do kind of like the disciples. I'm going to walk and talk to people and knock on doors, and that's what I did. So it was really a great experience. Just the whole process. I mean, sure. I enjoyed meeting people on the doorstep, talking to people, listening to what people wanted to see the vision of Warren County to be. And so it ended up, the election came in my favor. We had a non-contentious, election process. I respect Sheriff Gaines and what he has done, and more so now being in the position.
Yeah, I bet.
Knowing how much time it takes, and not only me, that time away from family, the commitment of my spouse, and you know, just a lot of weekends going to events, a lot of late night events, just a lot of things, just work every day. So I really respected him for all his, him in Maryland for all the years.
Sometimes you need to be careful what you ask for, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But, you know, talking about your family, you know, anytime you get into politics, it really is a family affair, and you need that buy-in from your team, because, you know, they're going to be there with you, and you know, sometimes they are the brunt of people that may not like you. They're gonna attack other people that may be close to you, and so it's great that, you know, you got all them involved and got their input, because without that, it's tough. It's really tough.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So, what have been some of the biggest challenges you faced since you've been sheriff? I mean, it's you know, you've been there, what, 6-7 years now?
I'm finishing up my seventh year.
Yeah, you're finishing up your second term. And mm-hmm. so you got re-election coming up here soon.
Right.
So some of the biggest challenges.
You know, I will say, kind of in the short order, COVID was a huge challenge.
Yeah.
You know, there was no script to go by. And when you've got, you know, over 100 employees looking to you to try to maintain order, you know, a lot of things were shutting down, but we need to keep the office open. And so we didn't have a matrix to go by. And so, you know, we kind of created our own internal driven policy of how we were going to, you know, handle a lot of the things that came up. And so with that, I thought communication is always key.
Yeah.
And so we basically created a number that people could call in at a certain time every day. I would give people updates on just what's happening nationally, what's happening internally, you know, and all those kind of things that I thought were important. We ended up having even employees, family members join in, because there just wasn't a lot of information coming, even nationally, to a lot of respective ways that I think we needed to convey that. So the governor, you know, he started kind of giving out some information as well. So we kind of would piggyback some things, looking at numbers as far as COVID and all that on the tail end of that. But, you know, that was something we had to deal with. But overall, too, not long after that, it's really maintaining the community's trust in our public service.
Right.
And, you know, we had the George Floyd event that happened. And so what happens nationally greatly affects us locally at times. And so, you know, if you see one person doing something in a profession inappropriately, you don't cast that onto every other person in that same profession. But law enforcement, it's very different.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we are there to serve the community in the integrity and the public trust of everybody that we deal with every day. And so with that, you know, you had COVID, you had that going on. The academy was shut down due to COVID. And so we saw some folks who thought, I'm getting out of law enforcement. One, right. You know, it just was a hard time. And so that was another huge challenge for us, just going through that. And it continues. You know, my number one priority is really maintaining our public safety and trust within our community and of the leadership that we have for the sheriff's office.
Yeah. And you know, mentioning the George Floyd incident and then the Breonna Taylor, I thought one of the great things that happened here locally was that you and Chief Delaney and Chief Walker sort of banded together to try to build that community trust as well. You just didn't try to do it on your own. It was important for all law enforcement come together and sort of be there to answer questions and talk to people and make people feel at ease, because, you know, there are a lot of people that don't trust law enforcement.
Right.
And that's just the bottom line. Right. And, you know, being out there among the community, talk a little bit about that, because y'all were out there, y'all were front and center, and you wanted to make sure that people understood that you were there for them. You weren't against them.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was kind of the interesting thing is you could watch video and see, and as a law enforcement perspective, we know what's right and what's not, you know,
right.
And so it was kind of interesting to me as we were kind of on the side of a lot of folks that, you know, this was inappropriate behavior, and then some people were casting us like we were villainized as part of that. So you know, and trust isn't gained in a day.
No.
And for years and years and years, and well preceding me, if you go into Chief Raymer and Chief Waltrip and, you know, the other chiefs and leadership that we've had, these have been years and years of building, inroads into the public trust of our community. Mm-hmm. And it's building those bridges. And so, but the problem is it can be lost in a day on one indiscretionary event that happens.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's one of the things we try to always instill in our team of employees is just treat people, you know, as your family. And truly, we try to do that. You know, now there's times that people will come at us in, you know, a very negative, aggressive manner. And you have to, unfortunately, arrest people and deal with them as it is. But
yeah.
But as well as we can, you know, it's all about just making sure you're treating people as best you can in this profession.
Talk a little bit, you know, when I mentioned Chief Walker, I'm talking about Mitch Walker. He's the chief of the WKU Police, and Chief Delaney, who's the chief of the Bowling Green Police Department. You three have been around a while. Y'all have known each other a long time. You aren't new to each other. So a lot of communities don't have that camaraderie between the chief and the sheriff where they've actually worked together in the past and they've, you know, have been colleagues for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Chief Walker and myself, we were on the neighborhood response team, bike patrol. We rode in the same cruiser. You know, we have a lot of respect for one another. We were both, you know, hardworking on the road.
Yeah.
And so we have that type of relationship, and the same with Chief Delaney. I mean, he and I were on the critical response team, the Bowling Green SWAT team together.
Yeah.
I was his supervisor at one time. So we have a history and years of knowing one another, and they're both two strong Christian men that we both have, you know, all a commonality of wanting to know what's best for the community and working together. And there's times if there's something I need or I can call, pick up the phone and call Chief Delaney, call Chief Walker, and we will absolutely help reciprocate one another's needs as best we can.
Yeah, there's not a lot of communities that have that type of relationship between their law enforcement agencies. So we're lucky here.
Well, we are, and you see some places that some seem to be in competition or kind of bumping heads over things. And for us,
we call those turf battles, right?
Yeah, absolutely. and you know, for us, it's really easy to just work together in a cohesive manner.
Yeah, so. One of the other challenges, and I don't know if I should tell this story or talk about it. Maybe you don't want to, but was the tornadoes. And I remember seeing you a day or two after the tornadoes hit, because, and it may have been the day of, I was out checking on some elderly folks that I knew, and you were telling me a story about coming down the bypass and there was some drunk guy.
Well, it was. It was actually, I had... right after the tornado, I called our dispatch center and asked if we'd received any damage reports. And unfortunately, they had given me a location out off Russellville Road. I drove over there.
Yeah,
two houses were gone. Come to find out, one of the young men in those that house had been killed by the tornado. And so I was trying to get down to the Bowling Green Police Department so we could have, you know, the incident command center of all of our leadership with emergency management. And so I'm coming down Russell Road, and I come up on Emmett. And as you get in close there, I mean, the telephone poles were across the road. There were signs. There was tons of damage. And I was like, this is bad. You know, this is really bad. And so I had my lights on in my cruiser, and I could see these headlights of somebody going outbound, not towards town, but outbound. And you could hear them crunching over just debris.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, my goodness, this person's probably – hurt, damaged. They were in the tornado, and as they get closer, you know, they had hit an electric line that didn't have power to it, but they knocked a telephone pole, almost came down their car, and
yeah.
Oh my gosh, this is terrible. And as they got closer, they started picking up speed, and I'm seeing that there's slack in another electric line in front of me, and I'm afraid their car's going to hit it and pull down those two telephone poles, so I start backpedaling. And luckily, the hood of their vehicle just missed it by a couple of inches. And I thought, they're probably injured. They're trying to get to the hospital. I'm going to see if I can help them. I get in behind them trying to stop them. They don't stop. They turn on to veterans. They're going veterans back down towards downtown. I finally get them stopped and went up to the driver's side door, opened the door, and the guy was very intoxicated. And he said he'd gotten turned around. I thought, my goodness, you just went through a tornado. You didn't even realize it.
Yeah.
His car or his truck was so damaged from going through the debris and through the tornado. But fortunately, there was a Western unit and one of our units pull up behind. So I was like, you guys got to handle this. I got to go. And they did.
But it just, you know, remarkable. Sometimes people, you know, they get to drinking, they get clueless. They don't. They were in a tornado. And, you know, fortunately, you were there to you know, get them off the road first and foremost. But, you know, one of the things that happened with the tornadoes, again, the three law, really all the law enforcement agencies, not just the three, state police as well, all coming together and setting up that, but also the mayor and the judge, you know, just tackling this thing head on before, you know, it got out of control with, you know, stuff that happens after disasters like that. So, you know, great job putting all that together. Talk a little bit about how that worked out.
It was from that day on. I mean, I really don't think any of the, probably the major leaders or public officials got much sleep in about the next 7 to 8 days.
Yeah.
There was a flood of information. You know, we were still looking for people who were reported missing, trying to set up phone lines. I was able to get in touch with some folks from my church that came in and manned some of those lines just to take phone calls off the dispatch center. So, you know, working with Ronnie with emergency management and just trying to get a hold of all that. Then you had a lot of people who wanted to bring items in. And you know, that comes with its own challenges. You know, where are you going to put them? Where are you going to store them? Who's going to manage it? How's it going to be handled? There's so many different things that we were having to try to consider, and then just navigating roadways. So many people who were you know, displaced, working with a lot of the nonprofits with that. But I can tell you that from the beginning of that, we really were not out of much eyesight of each other for days after that, working together cohesively. And our fire chief too, Justin, Brooks did a fabulous job as well. And his folks were fully involved with that. I mean, it was cohesive with the volunteer fire, our you know, Bowling Green fire, our sheriff's office. You know, we were able to get some National Guard down here, state police, Bowling Green police, and we would meet, you know, multiple times throughout the day and just, you know, whiteboards and just trying to navigate through all that and then giving out as much information as we could to the community.
Yeah.
And so it was a very difficult, trying time. But I will say, once again, what I appreciate about Bowling Green, Warren County, is that I truly believe our leadership is looking for what's best for everybody. They're not looking out for an individual of what's best for them or their particular agency. It's everybody's kind of all hands in. And it's been like that for years.
Yeah.
And it doesn't happen overnight.
No, it doesn't.
But it's very, very helpful. And particularly when you come into catastrophic events like we had, everybody coming together and pulling together as one team.
Yeah, and obviously a lot of lessons learned from that to prepare in case, some, you know, hopefully nothing ever happens again, but y'all have got a playbook now,
right,
to go by. So talk about some of the biggest rewards you've had in your role as sheriff.
Oh, you know, coming in and almost having the vision I had, and there were several things that I had wanted. And, you know, my job when I was working at the U.S. Attorney's Office, I was the law enforcement coordinator and had 53 counties, you know, working directly for the U.S. Attorney, kind of the liaison, setting up training, talking to a lot of people, seeing and listening to a lot of the different ideas out there. And so I had my own vision kind of coming in. And one of those things, and unfortunately we had a situation here yesterday with the school shooter. Mm-hmm. But one of my biggest priorities was the safety of our schools.
Yeah.
And when I came in, I think we had 4 school resource officers. We now have 22.
That's awesome.
It's awesome. And so, you know, we have all these well-trained officers that are in the schools there to maintain, you know, the safety. And they're not there for disciplinary reasons. You know, the schools have their own policies, procedures on how they manage it. You know, when I was in high school, that was usually was a board about 2.5 feet tall. And so
the other board of education.
The other board of education. But you know, things have changed. Yeah. And but they had their own policies to deal with violations of their policy. We're there for worst case scenario and building relationships with a lot of the student body. and being, you know, visibly and keenly aware of kids who might not be fitting in or need some additional assistance or somebody just to come up and talk to them and building those relationships. But that's been a huge success. And I can't thank, you know, both our city and county schools for seeing that vision as well. And you know, our legislators have helped create some mandates on some of that. But it truly is a great relationship. And if we have anything that happens in the schools, you know, both superintendents are either calling me, I'm calling them. We have SRO managers kind of for both that are on top of things. We have, you know, we're text groups that they communicate with every day. And so, you know, you think about it, we have 24,000 students between city and county schools. That's bigger than most cities across, you know, Kentucky.
Yeah, and counties.
And counties, yeah. And so
put it in perspective, Simpson County has 20,000 people.
Right, so. Right. So a lot of moving parts. And so I think our communication has been an absolute key factor in all this.
Yeah.
And when we do have threats that come up and social media threats that happen, you know, that's something we added a SRO detective this year. And, you know, his sole thing is to basically focus in on those, because if not, we're having to pull from our other detective division.
Yeah.
And the year before, we'd had an incident that was closely paired with a school threat, just a lot of things to manage, and I wanted somebody specifically for the schools. That's worked out really good. But that's been a great success. Our chaplaincy program, when I came in to build that chaplaincy program, when we have, you know, situations where we have to go out and inform people, it might be a fatality in a vehicle accident, it could be, you know, a fire incident.
Yeah.
It could be a natural death, but we have chaplains that come in, and we have about 10 different chaplains, and they rotate, they're on call, and that helps take a burden off of our deputies. When you have to go and knock on somebody's door and share the most horrific news those people are ever going to hear in their life, but you have somebody there, it's not about religion, it's about loving, it's about caring and for our community and giving somebody some support in a time of need, and they can help direct them, you know, to the coroner's office, give them information. There's some follow-up phone calls and care that goes on a lot of times with that.
Yeah.
And there's support groups and networks they can put them in with as well. So, you know, but from our accident reconstruction to the way we've developed our detective division on major crimes, in our crime scene team that comes out, how all that works together, our drone teams, it's just technology is a big part of what we do. And so we've kind of moved into this technology aspect within the sheriff's office that has really enhanced, I think, our response to a lot of different scenes. And that kind of helps us. And more than anything, the future is at our hands with this new facility.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the new facility on Sugar Maple and kind of right now we're in phase one of that. So the old Houchin Center, you know, they got the walls up in there. They've got the electric run. The plumbing's done. And that's going to be a really nice place for all of Warren County. It's not just for us as the sheriff's office, but Warren County is going to benefit from this. We have space now that we haven't had before in a growing community like none other. And so we've got a community room in there that we've already been talking to the Department of Criminal Justice about teaching classes more here. That means we don't have to send our folks to Richmond or other places for that training. They'll be doing that here. We're going to have a simmunitions training room for people to train on entries or you know, vehicle stops for our new deputies and older deputies. We have a virtual reality training area there where you put on the Oculus. We can run people through scenarios in there. Wow. And so for de-escalation on different things, and that's part of our hiring process. We'll put that on people, and even though they'll go through scenarios, and we just see how naturally they can de-escalate or how they talk to people, how their verbalization skills. So all these things are happening. So we hope that by the end of October, we should be able to have a certificate of occupancy where our deputies and our criminal investigations division will move in there and our training manager. And then the next phase will start further down the building where that will eventually be the business office, our dispatch center, and my office as well.
Okay.
So having us all on one property together, it helps with communications and everything else as well. So that was another vision when I came into office. I said, we've got to move forward. And thankfully, with the you know, the leadership of both Judge Executive Gorman and our magistrates, they've seen this as well. And so you have to kind of build, go back and rebuild the building blocks for just the support structure you need for the future of Warren County.
Yeah.
And so I'm very thankful that they have come along and seen the same vision and helped make that a reality.
Well, that's a nice segue because, you know, we just had this BG 2050 initiative and, you know, we're expected to grow like in the next 25, 30 years, basically the size of Bowling Green, another population the size of Bowling Green. And this is a big step, having this one campus out at Sugar Maple and having fiscal court be so supportive of that as well. But talk about the growth and how you're planning to deal with it beyond this new facility.
Yeah, you have to have a vision. And that's the thing is, with this facility here, it will help us even for further expansion. You know, you got to go another 20 years. And as you talk about the population, you know, we're going to have to expand business office at some point and continue expansion of deputies, which we've done since I came in office, just to kind of keep up with calls for service and you know, responsiveness to our community needs. And so I think it was just a great idea to buy that space. It's a mile from downtown, so it's not much further, but the parking, just the facility itself. And so it lends itself to further growth and advancement within the community. And so the amount that they paid was well worth the money. And I think it's going to be a great thing for Warren County.
Fantastic. So talk about, when you talk about growing communities, that means you have to grow your staff and you need more deputies. And how does recruiting work in all this?
Yeah, well, as we talked earlier, there was a time when the academy shut down and from Breonna to George Floyd, you could see nationally people were pulling away out of law enforcement. I had many conversations with people who said, I want to get into law enforcement. My family's opposed. You know, they think it's too dangerous. I need to go a different direction. But we are fortunate right here, at least we're fortunate here at the Warren County Sheriff's Office. If we have seen in the last year a trend that we're getting really good candidates.
Yeah.
We're getting good people in here who have a heart to serve Warren County, that are ready to come out and join this team and be a part of what we have in our future. And so, you know, and once again, I want to thank our fiscal court and our judge for continuing to pace our salaries with what's happened nationally with increased cost of everything. And so in order to be in the game, you know, you got to be competitive to some degree. You're never going to be rich in this job, but you can be rich from what you glean from the job. And so, but you have to have at least a competitive wage where people have to be able to afford a home and groceries and a car and all these other things. So we are in a good place right now. We've got some retirements. We got one this Friday. So that opens up a position. And so we're continuing to receive applicants for that. And you know, the difficulty for us is not necessarily getting the people, but then you have to get them through training.
Yeah.
And the training takes so long, you know, because it takes you a couple of months by the time you do the interview, the background, all the other things that go with making sure you have the best candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to get them set up for the academy. They go to the academy. It's 18 weeks long.
Yeah.
And then they come back, and then you've got another 4 months of field training on top of that. So it's really about a year from the time you hire somebody until they become out on their own as a brand new rookie deputy. That's a long time.
Yeah.
So you have to think about filling those positions as early as possible, so that you're not working short. That can happen, and that you, when you're working short, what you see is guys become fatigued. And they have to work, you know, maybe some more overtime or days off. They're not getting as much family time, and the job itself is already difficult.
Yeah.
And you're working holidays, you're working weekends. You might not get the shift you want. So
overnight,
all those things. Yeah. So it's just, you don't want to put additional fatigue on those folks. So I think the key for us is listening, And we try to get feedback from our deputies on things we can do to make their lives easier.
But also keeping a pipeline of new people coming in on a consistent basis, because if it takes a year,
that's
right. You know, there's always someone that's going to be rolling off, and you got to have people rolling in.
Right. Yeah, we've got several folks who are on the cusp of either retirement now or within the next few years.
Y'all can bring John Bailey back, can't you?
Well, if he wants to come back, I mean, you know, John was a great asset to the sheriff's office.
Yeah, I'm giving him a hard time. He's a great guy. So talk about a little bit. Now, I don't want you to go into, you know, what you do every day, but tell us what someone might be surprised to know about the duties of the sheriff or a deputy.
Yeah, the general duties, I think a lot of people, and I'll kind of roll through that, and then I'll talk about my day-to-day activities, is, you know, a lot of people think of the sheriff's office as maybe just doing traffic enforcement. Warren County is very different than a lot of other counties across the state of Kentucky. Us in Owensboro, or Davis County, is probably as close, we're more closely aligned than most sheriff's office, because we have 24/7 deputies that are out there. A lot of sheriff's offices don't have the staffing or the manpower. They may work during the day, and a lot of times state police in your more rural areas might be the responsive right. agency later on in the evening or early morning hours. So, you know, we have the court security that is what we have to do, and that's part of my duties and responsibilities as sheriff. We just had a big court case here, mm-hmm. You know, that came out of Nelson County, and the amount of manpower that takes, and Lieutenant Hyde over there, he's in charge of our court security, and ran it flawlessly. And we had a lot of accolades from the defense team sent me a very nice email 2 days after that, just thanking us for how we managed and handled, you know, them and the media and everything that had to do with that. But then we've got, you know, the SRO program.
Right.
So we've got that whole basket to deal with. And then we've got the business office and taxes.
Yep.
And so Kentucky's the anomaly, is most sheriff's offices in the United States deal with the jails. And some of them do traffic enforcement, but we don't have to deal with the jails. Thank goodness we have Jailer Harmon here that it manages the jails. And so, but we have the taxes. So we're the responsible party to collect the taxes. So we have that. And then we've got traffic enforcement as well. And so we're helping out with all Warren County's traffic enforcement, from everything from, you know, homicides to accidents to whatever else comes about.
Right.
And then, you know, the other part of that, we have a dispatch center. So we have our own dispatch center of about 18 employees. And so all those things happen every day. And so nearly 130 employees that you're managing, those folks, as well as, you know, the rest of the community. So there's a lot there.
A lot of moving parts.
So your second part of the question is my day-to-day activities. I think is always interesting. I have an open door policy, and so I have probably 2 to 3 just citizens that come into my office normally every day.
Right.
And they may want to just inform me about something. They may have an issue. Sometimes these don't even touch the sheriff's office. But, you know, for me, it's trying to be a connector. Yeah. I had a lady come in my office yesterday. She was trying to get a birth certificate on one of her children. She was from Iraq, mm-hmm. and it had to be kind of embossed. And so had to be a special birth certificate in order for the child to travel back and forth to Iraq. And so where do you go for that?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and so
Secretary of State's all, I don't know.
Yeah, so we had to kind of help her. It took us about 45 minutes and helped her navigate through that. We got online. We made phone calls. We pulled up, you know, stuff for her. She didn't speak a whole lot of English, but we made it through it. And so a connector that might not have anything to do with the office, but what we will try to help folks navigate whatever it is they need to navigate.
And that's awesome.
Yeah, and that's a lot of what I do. And so sometimes people just want to come in and inform me of things, and we'll sit down and talk about a particular issue. It could be speeding, which we've got speeding in Warren County. We've got a deputy that does speeding enforcement. And we've got the travel trailers to mark your speed, just give people an idea.
It sat in my yard for a week about 2 months ago.
Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, so it's all these different things that day to day. And then while I'm doing that, I'm also managing budget, looking to forecast next year's budget, checking out this year's budget, and fuel prices right now are
a little higher,
and that greatly affects us because we're driving, we average 20,000 miles on each of our cruisers per year. Mm-hmm. I mean, Warren County is 546 square miles.
Yeah.
A lot of fuel. So I have to closely manage and monitor our fuel consumption as well. So there's a lot of things I'm doing, and then forecasting out training, oversight, some of this build that we have going on right now with the help of the deputy judge executive, Brian, helping out. And so there's just a lot of things that happen every day in Warren County.
A lot of moving parts. Well, you have really given us a great insight into what happened, not only with your day-to-day role, but what happens with the Sheriff's Department. Now let's talk about some personal stuff. You just got back from the Grand Canyon.
Yes.
So you did the rim to rim.
Absolutely.
With a guy named Brandon Harris. So we need to talk about some of the company you're keeping, but that's okay. Brandon's a good fella. So tell us, and I bring this up because I've done it twice and I'm going back again here. Well, as this episode airs, I'll be out there.
That's awesome. Yeah.
But how'd you like it?
I thought it was great. Great experience. Yeah. And like I say, myself and four guys from my church.
Yep.
One of them throwing the idea out there. I think it was Brandon.
Yeah, because he's done it before.
He's done it before. And him and his wife, Tina. And so he kind of mentioned it back. It was probably early last spring. And mm-hmm. so thought, why not? I've been out to the Grand Canyon myself several times, done some hiking. My wife and I, we've been married a couple of years, hiked down into the canyon and stayed at the Indian reservation down there, down by the waterfall.
Yeah.
I mean, it was absolutely beautiful. And I thought, well, yeah, might as well.
Yeah, why not?
So we started training and working towards that. And found at the Western Football Stadium stairs.
Yeah, you love them, don't you?
Very helpful. So in the evening, try to do multiple flights of that. And but that really, it's all about training, getting yourself prepared. So we went out there. Our plan initially was to go from the north to the south rim. Mm-hmm. But then after we had done some additional reading, come to find out some of the water points, they were doing some...
they were replacing the water line out
there. Yeah, and so I didn't want to go 7 miles without any water. I've hiked out there before.
Yeah.
And looking at temperatures, when the time of year we were going to be out there, we're going to probably be between 110 and 114 mm-hmm. down in the canyon.
Yep.
In the box, they call it. So we kind of flipped the script, and we ended up going south to north. So as you know, it's a 1,000-foot additional...
Little tougher.
...elevation. But at the same time, our water point, we were only going to have to go 5 miles after our final stop. And so it took us right at, I think it was 13 hours, if I got that right, 13, 14 hours, something like that, do it. But it was beautiful. We started out early in the morning and finished right about time.
Now, did you start at Bright Angel or South Kaibab?
We had to go South Kaibab.
Okay.
Bright Angel was... I think it was closed because of the repairs on it.
Yeah.
So we went south to North Kaibab. And unfortunately, I mean, literally like 2 weeks after we came out is when they had the fires up there.
Yeah, the Dragon Bravo fire, which is finally out. But the north side of the Grand Canyon, both Silver and Black Bridges are closed till November 1st. Phantom Ranch is closed till November 1st. Yeah. So we've had to adjust our route. And so we're going to... we're staying at Bright Angel Lodge, and we're going to hike from Bright Angel Lodge to the South Kaibab Trailhead. We're going to go all the way down to the tip-off point, come across Tonto, and then go down to the river and then back up Bright Angel. So we'll get 20-something miles in, but we're all going to be on the south side of the canyon. So
It's not just about hydration, but electrolytes are another huge part about it. People don't realize you'll burn about 5,500 calories in that hike.
Oh, yeah.
So that's, most people, that's probably 2 days food consumption, and you're burning through that. Well, once you burn through it, I mean, if you're not replenishing that, your body's going to say, I'm
no
done.
Yeah. Well, I love the signs out there that says going down's optional, going up's mandatory. So, something to keep in mind. Well, I'm glad you got to do that. That's a lot of fun. And I know, training for that. Of course, we've been training all summer as well, getting ready to do it again. And I'm looking forward to it. It's so fun.
I've hiked about 600 miles on the Appalachian Trail as well. And this job here is kind of taking me off the trail. It's just, it's hard for me to get out of Warren County for the most part. It really is. But prior to coming in here, I'd head out there and do a week or two, get 100+ miles in and come off. But I hope to get back out there soon as well.
Awesome. Well, Sheriff Hightower, thanks for being on the DeCesare Group podcast.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Warren County Sheriff Brett Hightower for being my guest on the DeCesare Group podcast. Hey, if you like what you hear, please share it with a friend. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Leave us a review and share your feedback with us as well. You can also follow the DeCesare Group across all of our social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, X, and YouTube. And you can subscribe to our weekly newsletter, Soke Economic Development and Business News, by going to our website, thedecesaregroup.com. The DeCesare Group podcast is produced by the DeCesare Group, a public relations and consulting firm based in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Our engineer and audio deputy is Justin DeCesare, with content contributions from Brooke Mattingly. The DeCesare Group podcast is researched by Amy DeCesare. I'm Jim DeCesare, inviting you to join us again next time for the DeCesare Group podcast.